VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. And folks, just a side note, yes, indeed, the president was acquitted yesterday, that vote happening after the Crosstalk program. We'll have more to say that on that issue on tomorrow's Crosstalk program. Today, we're going to hit an important topic. CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, boasts as being the nation's largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization. Just recently, they have launched their Muslims Vote campaign, which they indicate is designed to empower American Muslims by increasing their political capacity and presence in the 2020 general election. Who exactly is CARE? What is their agenda? Should there be concern about political engagement? Joining us today, we welcome back John Guandolo, who is president and founder of Understanding the Threat. They are the only organization in America providing tools to leaders, police, and citizens to identify and dismantle jihadi terrorist networks in their local communities. John advises governments on matters related to national security, specifically the threat from the global Islamic movement. He's a former FBI agent, a counterterrorism expert, co-author of the book Sharia, The Threat to America, and author of Raising a Jihadi Generation and the 2019 release, Islam's Deception, The Truth About Sharia. John, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you so much for having me again. I really appreciate it.
And John, I believe it's really important for us to first understand, before we talk about this, the Muslims Vote campaign by CARE, we need to first understand who exactly CARE is, the Council on American Islamic Relations. We regularly have new listeners to this program. You are well-versed in this area. Who exactly is CARE?
Well, CARE is Hamas, which is a foreign terrorist organization, and they're not like Hamas. They're not sympathetic to Hamas. They are Hamas leaders in suits wearing the mask of the Council on American Islamic Relations. So I'd like, first, I'd say for any of your listeners who are not familiar with Understanding the Threat and our work, go to understandingthethreat.com. On our homepage, there is a box that says CARE is Hamas. Click it, and you will get a significant amount of detailed evidence and facts to demonstrate that CARE is a Hamas organization. Now, with that said, to be clear, if I could just give three or four quick nuggets, CARE was created in 1994 by the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood's Palestine Committee, which is Hamas in the United States. The U.S. government, the Department of Justice, has entered the information I've just talked about into evidence. They've written memorandums to this point, and that's the way it is, and there's no getting around who CARE is. And we also know that, as a matter of fact, the leaders, two of the three founders of CARE, Nihad Awad and Omar Ahmad, are actually named as being leaders of the U.S. Palestine Committee, which is Hamas. Matter of fact, the chairman emeritus for CARE, Omar Ahmad, is listed by the Department of Justice in Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas documents as being on the executive committee for the Hamas leadership in the United States. And both Nihad Awad and Omar Ahmad's names are literally on a list that was discovered in an FBI raid in Annandale, Virginia, in 2004, with the leadership of Hamas in the United States. And there is so much more evidence, but I really encourage your listeners to go to understandthreat.com and look at that. But the last thing I'll say is this. In the U.S. versus Holy Land Foundation trial, which was adjudicated in Dallas, Texas, in 2008, was the largest terrorism financing trial ever successfully prosecuted in American history. And when CARE said, we want our names off the unindicted co-conspirator list in the largest terrorism financing trial in American history. The judge and the appellate court both ruled to leave their name on there because, as the judge said, there is ample evidence to establish the relationship between CARE and Hamas.
Wow. Wow. We hear of Hamas, but we don't hear of CARE in those same terms. That's been several years ago now since that trial. Has there been any move to look further into them from the Department of Justice to reveal to the public who they really are?
That is a great question. Well, the case was adjudicated in November of 2008, and they were indicted right after 9/11. The Holy Land Foundation was, which, by the way, was the largest Islamic charity in America, and it was a front for the group Hamas. It was one of the other groups created by the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood's Palestine Committee. Well, why is this important? It's important because when we look at what was going on in 2008, we see November, you've got Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and the prosecutors came back in the new year, 2009, and they spent 6 months preparing for the indictments of the over 200 unindicted co-conspirators, and that included Omar Ahmad, the chairman emeritus of CARE and CARE itself. And the attorney general of the United States at that time, Eric Holder, shut that investigation down.
John, according to their news brief, they estimate that there are more than 1 million registered American Muslim voters with large communities residing in key swing states. Would you agree with those numbers?
I don't trust anything CARE says. They're a terrorist group. They have a long history of lying. When they open their mouth, it's to propagandize for a hostile movement here. And by the way, understanding the threat assessment is Nihad Awad, the executive director of Hamas doing business as CARE, is also the leader of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, whose stated goal is to overthrow our government and impose an Islamic state here. So that's who you're dealing with when you're dealing with CARE. So whatever comes out of their mouths, I don't trust any of it. Even, you know, they may be, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut sometimes, but we know that CARE is a group that lies as a matter of course. And it's one of their main strategic methods on how they get accomplished what they're trying to accomplish.
Okay, so let's talk about their executive director, Nihad Awad. He said this in this release. He said, CARE is excited to launch our robust Muslims Vote 2020 general election campaign to support turning out our nation's 1 million registered Muslim voters during the primaries and in November. He goes on to say, unlocking the voting potential and political power of the Muslim community is CARE's number one goal. John, describe how you see their reference to political power. What does that look like?
Well, they want to, all you got to do is read their stuff. And they're on record. And the evidence has been entered into the largest terrorism trials in U.S. history about who CARE is. They're Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization, and their goal is to establish a global Islamic state. So when they talk about political power, they talk about the totalitarian power of Islam in the United States. And they are at the one of the main lines of attack is CARE. They're a primary propaganda wing, and they're talking about real political power.
Do you see CARE growing? I mean, they reference they've got a network of 31 offices in some 20 states involved in this Muslims Vote campaign. Is CARE growing? Are they having a greater foothold, should I say a footprint, across the United States?
They are. I mean, but they're one big piece in a much larger effort here, since the 1950s. And a part of what understanding the threat does is we put all those pieces together so that leaders, citizens, law enforcement, community leaders can see it in a very simple, practical way. But the Islamic movement that's here in the United States, of which CARE is a big part, because their leader, Nihad Awad, happens to be also the national leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. So CARE's role is what it is. But what this whole get out the vote effort is a means to bring political pressure to candidates to cave to Muslim demands. That's the primary thing they are trying to do, and that's how they wield their power.
Matter of fact, Nihad Awad is saying that this 2020 general election, he calls it a pivotal moment in the history of our nation and American Muslims. So I'd like you to comment on that pivotal moment. John, what do you see as at stake in this election?
The entire history of the Republic. The communist movement, the U.S. Marxist counterstate, the Islamic counterstate are converging on this election as the key point. And I'll just put it on the table that we do have a senior commander for Al-Qaeda who in 2003 was on record in Der Spiegel in Germany, gave an interview and laid out Al-Qaeda's timeline, and their final victory year was 2020. Now, the global Islamic movement and the U.S. Islamic movement, they do not adhere to mere timelines. The way they operate is by once they meet one objective, one milestone, they move to the next milestone or objective, and they keep doing that until the objectives that get them to the final strategy, which is an Islamic state, is achieved. What I think it's important for your listeners to know is both the Marxist counterstate and the Islamic counterstate are moving in the United States nearly unopposed. The reason that the communists are coming out of the woodwork and we're now seeing them with in their true colors is quite frankly because this president, from the time he laid out his agenda, his campaign plan, all of that, it was very counter-revolutionary and anti-communist in its very core. So he is a natural opponent of totalitarian ideologies, even if he doesn't intend to be. But obviously, he loves America. He loves liberty. He's a defender of liberty. And all of his policies, from his rebuilding our nuclear system to rebuilding our military to shrinking government to ensuring our sovereignty, these are all virulently anti-communist programs that destroy their ability to work in the system. And in addition to that, he is beginning to see, based on some of the things he's saying and doing, how deep and deeply they're embedded in our system and inside the key components of the government. So all of this is coming together when you ask about the 2020 election. All of this, they are organized against him, and it's the reason he is being so he's being attacked in such a specific and aggressive and, quite frankly, overwhelming way.
John Guandola is our guest today here on Crosstalk. His website, understandingthethreat.com. That's understandingthethreat.com. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to learn more about the Muslims Vote election campaign and also the encouragement for additional Muslims to run for office, and also the questionnaire, their sample questionnaire for candidates and government officials that is being sent out. You'll learn about what some of those questions are and, yeah, even the meaning behind them. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, if sedimentary rock is made up of sediments deposited by Noah's flood, where did the sediments come from?
Chris, it appears that before the flood, calcareous ooze made of tiny marine animals and secretions accumulated on the ocean bottom. Scooped up by the flood, they became today's limestone deposits. It also appears that the sandstone deposits came from created granitic rock, which eroded to yield the sand that are modern-day sandstones. Also, during the flood, intense volcanism occurred as the fountains of the Great Deep broke open, depositing huge quantities of volcanic ash. This became intermingled with other flood sediments to form a variety of rock types. Chris, I think the flood of Noah's Day is a very important concept which we must understand if we ever hope to understand the world around us. Let's develop a Back to Genesis way of thinking.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. John Guandolo is our guest today. He's a former FBI agent and a counterterrorism expert. He is the president and founder of Understanding the Threat and his website, understandingthethreat.com. You need to check out the site. We're talking about CARE launching their 2020 Muslims Vote campaign. And, John, I'm looking at some of the components of their election campaign, and I find their first component very interesting, and that is, and I quote, to build a national database of more than a million Muslim registered voters based on 60,000-plus common Muslim names. And I found it interesting, especially since this past December it was announced Mohammed for the first time in U.S. history made the top 10 baby names for boys in the U.S. And here they're using that search engine to find the first names of Muslims in order to build their database.
Right. I think it's important for your listeners to really understand that what you've just described is a piece of an intentional campaign whose sole purpose is to advance Islam and the Islamic movement in the United States.
Hmm.
Everything they do, let me be more clear. We have their documents. We know that they have continued on an annual basis where they review everything they do internally, meaning not just CARE, but the key Muslim Brotherhood organizations in the United States, and there are hundreds of them, literally, and I mean hundreds of parent organizations. There are thousands of entities. So if you add up, you know, the Muslim Student Associations, over 800 chapters, the Muslim Brotherhood mosques around the country, it's probably 75%+ of the 3,600 mosques in the United States. You put together the 30 CARE chapters, 31 chapters, the 360 or so Islamic societies. You start seeing these numbers are big. They're not just a handful of people or organizations. They've got a significant national impact, and they build their strategy all around achieving their goal, which is to establish an Islamic state and overthrow the U.S. government. And here's my point, that all these things they're doing, they are constantly, CARE and the other groups, evaluating what they're doing, how successful it is, and how do we have to adjust it.
Hmm.
In my opinion, it's one of the most efficient, organized entities in North America, maybe in the world. And the sad thing is there's no organized federal strategy to destroy it, to destroy the Islamic movement here in the United States, primarily run by the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
And that therein lies the problem.
John, we're losing you at times on the phone there. If you talk right into the mouthpiece.
Okay.
Great.
Sorry about that. Are you getting me better now?
You're sounding much better now, yes.
Okay. I get excited when I talk, so I'm moving my phone around.
Yeah. Well, we know another component that they have is they say it's encouraging Muslims to run for office. They really want to see more like Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Keith Ellison in office. What kind of impact are these individuals making in their respective offices?
They're not having the impact that patriotic Americans think. In other words, we think, you know, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and Andre Carson and others, they're the gift that keeps on giving, because every time they open their mouths, it's some anti-American rant, and it shows them for what they are. But their broader strategic purpose is they are opening up huge areas for which the next layer that has already now begun appearing, and we were talking, Understand the Threat, and myself and my team, we were talking about this over 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
is now what we're seeing is that next wave that don't look like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. They don't wear hijabs. They talk in patriotic terms. They talk in fiscal conservative terms. These are good-looking, clean-cut men and women, and they're portraying and they're running as Republicans. And the Republican Party at the state level and the GOP level at the national level are embracing these people. And this is what we call the splinter. It's just, you know, CARE points to ISIS crucifying and beheading people, says they're radical. Look at me. I wear a suit. You can listen to me. And as people begin realizing, well, wait a minute, CARE is a Hamas organization, moving away from them, Then we look towards quote-unquote moderate Muslims, like Zudi Jasser and Rahil Raza and Kanta Ahmed and these others who are just another layer of the same movement. Now they're in the political realm. They're presenting people vastly more attractive to the American patriot in these Republican, appearing to be conservative, patriotic, fiscally conservative candidates. And in fact, they're just another layer of the same attack.
Here's another item that caught my attention. It says one of their components is work with other Muslim organizations to develop and release a unified Muslim policy platform for the 2020 election. John, what do you believe such a platform would look like?
Well, let me just say this. I know what their policy platform looked like in 2004 from CARE because they didn't intend it to become public. But our understanding the threat's former vice president when he was a pretending to be an intern at CARE's headquarters pulled 12,000 documents out of their headquarters that they intended to shred. And one was their proposed policy, political policy, and it was to work with Osama bin Laden and groups like him to advance the cause. So when they're in the public realm and you hear those words, these are the kinds of things that if you your listeners become more informed about this, they will realize this is a group that works with and supports terrorism because they are a terrorist group. It is Hamas doing business as CARE. And if your listeners take nothing else away than Hamas, DBA, CARE, if you get that, then you will ask, why are they allowed on Capitol Hill every day to meet with members of Congress? Uh-huh. Why are they allowed to do any of this? Why do we not bulldoze their headquarters, lock up their leadership, take their money, and shut them down? That should be the question. There's no alternative to that. Why aren't we doing that today?
Earlier this week, February 3rd, Kerik had conducted a pre-Iowa caucus poll, and they released their findings that Muslim voters prefer Bernie Sanders by 13% over their next favorite candidate, which was Joe Biden. John, what is it about Bernie Sanders that's a lure to Muslim voters?
He's a communist, and communism is a totalitarian ideology that seeks the overthrow of the United States. Joe Biden is a corrupt, self-serving, lifelong politician, and that doesn't necessarily get them what they want. They can work with the communists. They have been for decades in the United States at the local, state, and national level. They are working with Communist Party USA, Black Lives Matter, Code Pink, Answer, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, etc. That's why, because they're already working with them.
CARE has released a 15-page sample questions for candidates and government officials to understand the views and positions of candidates. And some of these I read here, they're rather quite skewed, but some have some hidden meaning behind them as well. But let me just share a few of these with you and have you comment. Number three is asking candidates on freedom to practice one's faith. Do you agree that the U.S. Constitution and state laws are not threatened by citizens privately following their own religious codes, such as the Jewish halakha, the Islamic Sharia, or Catholic canon law, as long as such religious codes comply with U.S. law? And I read that, John. I wondered, is Sharia even compatible with U.S. law?
No, of course it's not. And this is so much a Muslim Brotherhood talking point that we have a document that takes about the 38 to 40 most common comments we hear as pushback to the truth that we present to people, and one of them is that exact question. We get to practice Sharia because Jews get to practice Halakha and Christians get canon law. And the difference is that, well, first of all, they're lying because they know that Jewish Halakha says you must respect the law of the land in the country you're in. Sharia specifically says you obliterate and destroy the law of the land if it is not the Sharia of Allah. In the most widely used Islamic school textbook for U.S. seventh graders in America called What Islam is All About, it says the basis of the legal and political system is the Sharia of Allah, and it says the law of the land is the Sharia of Allah, and it says, quote, the duty of Muslim citizens is to be loyal to the Islamic State. Islam commands Muslims to enforce and impose Sharia on all citizens. Christian canon law is for Christians. Halakha is for practicing Jews. It is, and neither one of those doctrines requires those things to be imposed on people outside of that system of belief. Sharia is not the same. It is a oppressive, barbaric system that is contrary to human decency and natural law.
John Guandolo is our guest today, folks. His website, understandingthethreat.com. That's understandingthethreat.com. Here's another question. It's number four that it goes into air. They've got different elements on white supremacy, Islamophobia, and xenophobic hate. But one of the subparts on this is this question. Do you plan to address the rise in Islamophobia and hateful rhetoric towards Muslims in the United States? They're asking that question of candidates. John, they don't appreciate what you're saying about them or what Understanding the Threat is doing to expose them.
Right, and so we need to remember that when Muslims use words in English, those words mean what Islam has them mean. So Islamophobia, as we know, was a term coined by the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood's International Institute for Islamic Thought, which is their strategy center for the Muslim Brotherhood. And it is a code for imposing the Islamic law of slander on the United States, Europe, and the broader West. And what the Islamic law of slander says is you may not say anything about Islam or Muslims that they, quote, and this is the legalese in the law, that they don't like. So, it has nothing to do with the truth of the matter or the facts of the matter. Muslims do not like us speaking truthfully about Islam because it exposes Islam for the barbaric and inhumane system that it is. And therefore, they want people to know about Sharia when they're under it. Mm-hmm. When the Islamic State has you under their thumb, you will know everything you need to know about Sharia. Mm-hmm. To expose that to the non-Muslim community too early is slander, because it endangers the Muslim community from achieving their goal. That's how Islamic law sees it, and it's a capital crime. So when you get accused of being an Islamophobe, that is a threat on your life. So when they say, should we suppress Islamophobia, should we go after people who are Islamophobic, what they're saying is, will you support us, non-Muslim, communist, whoever you are, citizen who's ignorant, will you support us, the Islamic movement, going after people for violating the Islamic law of slander? That's what you need to understand in that question.
We're discussing with John Guandolo today, CARE, launching their 2020 Muslims Vote campaign, and they have released their sample questionnaire for candidates and government officials. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to probe just a couple more of these past our guests today before we're opening our phone lines to you to help you understand what is really taking place in our society today and the efforts that are being made to bring about the Muslim agenda here, the Islamic agenda for the United States. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Do you take time daily to study the Word of God? Do you go through the Bible systematically and read with comprehension? Do you desire to learn more than what you have in the past? VCY America is offering a package set of 4 books by Ron Rhodes from Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries. These Bible study books provide a systematic approach to help you gain better understanding of the Bible. Included in this set is 90 Days Through the New Testament in Chronological Order, providing overviews, powerful insights, and personal application. 40 Days Through Genesis, discover the story that started it all. 40 Days Through Daniel, revealing God's plan for the future. And 40 Days Through Revelation, uncovering the mystery of the end times. These 4 books are available as our way of saying thank you for your donation of $49 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. Don't let the lack of a Bible study plan keep you from daily devotions. Call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. John Guandolo is our guest today, president and founder of Understanding the Threat. Again, they are the only organization in America providing tools to leaders, police, and citizens to identify and dismantle the jihadi terrorist networks in their local communities. His website, understandingthethreat.com, he's got a number of resources on his site, as well as information, video, audio. You'll find it through his site, understandingthethreat.com. We're discussing right now the sample questions for candidates and government officials that CARE has put out. And as John has mentioned, we need to say virtually Hamas CARE because of their connection in that regard. John, I see question number five they're asking is dealing with religious accommodations. This one is for inmates. Do you support the right of Muslim and Jewish inmates to make religious accommodation requests for halal and kosher meals? Do you support the right of Muslim inmates to make religious accommodation requests for, talk about their religious headwear? And they mentioned things like the hijab. And then also, do you support the right of Muslim inmates to make religious accommodation requests for copies of the Quran and other religious texts, prayer mats, prayer beads, and other religious items? And do you support the right of Muslim inmates to make religious accommodation requests for modified meal schedules while fasting during Ramadan? Your thoughts on this question number five.
Right. So once again, let's unpack what they're doing. What they're trying to do is enmesh and mainstream Judaism and Christianity with Islam. And the problem is that the Quran teaches that there has to be permanent war against the non-Muslim community until Islam dominates and Sharia is the law of the land. That is very different than from what Judaism and Christianity teaches. And here's something for, I want to interject and just lay this on the table for your listeners and for people who will maybe listen afterwards, is the question I would ask is, we have the textbooks that they use in U.S. Islamic schools here, and what they teach the requirements of Islam are, for instance, that jihad is one of the three duties, that jihad is to physically confront evil and wrongdoing, that Sharia must be the law of the land imposed on all people. They teach that to children. So the question I think is very interesting to ask is, why is it that what Muslims are teaching Muslim children in U.S. Islamic schools is exactly opposite of what Islamic leaders are telling U.S. leaders at the local, state, federal level about Islam?
Wow, very interesting.
Well, because that gets to your point, should we allow halal in prisons? No, we shouldn't allow halal or hijab or any of that, because these are all visible signs of Sharia adherence. They're imposed by Sharia. They are not, quote, religious dictates. This is not a First Amendment issue. This is an Article 6 of the Constitution issue that Sharia says it has to be the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution in Article 6 says this Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. So Sharia is in direct conflict with the U.S. Constitution at its very beginning.
You mentioned education in Islamic schools, but here they're also trying to have the encroachment in the public school system with this question. It deals with school recognition of Muslim holidays. It's number 14 on their list. Do you support public school systems with significant Muslim populations in your congressional district and or stay closing for the Muslim holidays of Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha, with many students or faculty would otherwise be absent?
Right. Of course, the answer to that would be no, right? Because let's just talk about the Ramadan and Eid al-Fitr, right? The celebration at the end of Ramadan. What does that celebrate? What celebrates the first Islamic military victory over non-Islamic forces? Why would we celebrate that in U.S. Islamic schools? That's a legitimate matter. Well, why don't we celebrate Adolf Hitler's birthday, too? Why don't we celebrate Joseph Stalin's birthday? I'm sure they would appreciate all of those things, but we're not going to do that either. So until we deal with this from a realistic, honest appraisal of what Sharia actually is, what Islam actually is, here's a question for people that do not, who are very uncomfortable with this discussion. Tell us on your show, and for the people that are going to ask questions, what's the purpose of Islam? What does Islam say the purpose of Islam is? When you answer that question, all of this gets answered, because the purpose of Islam, according to 100% of Islamic doctrine, Sunni and Shia, is complete agreement that the singular purpose of Islam is to impose Allah's divine law, Sharia, on the earth, on every human on earth. That's it. And the vehicle to do it is called jihad, which is only legally defined in Islamic laws, warfare against non-Muslims. Once those things are understood, this discussion we're having becomes absurd, of course. Of course, we have to have it today because there's a huge lack of understanding.
Right.
Once you understand that, all this other stuff answers itself.
Folks, I've got more that I'd like to ask. I mean, this whole questionnaire here, Muslim student nutritional needs, the Muslim travel ban, so-called, ending the memorandums of understanding with ICE, voter ID, boycotts, etc. There's much in this booklet here, John Guandolo addressing them, but I'd like to open our phone lines today, as no doubt some of our discussion today has prompted questions in your own mind as it relates to the 2020 elections and Islam. Matter of fact, CARE has launched the 2020 Muslims Vote campaign. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. John, why is this so critical that we be talking about this today?
Well, because as it stands right now, both the U.S. Marxist communist counterstate and the Islamic counterstate not only have very organized and well-funded movements here in the United States, and they have doctrine, obviously, and strategies to implement the doctrine. And they are, I would argue, the communist movement has achieved, and the Islamic movement have achieved, nearly all of their objectives in moving towards their final, along the strategy lines to get their final objective. And there is no organized effort to oppose them outside of what understanding the threat is doing with a few of our allies. That's the problem. So the reason it's important we're talking about this is they are on the last stretch of the race towards victory, and our leadership has no idea that we're about to lose this entire war.
Wow. Our lines are packed right now, friends. As soon as we hang up with somebody, that's your opportunity to give us a call, 800-733-9829. Randy in Missouri, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had an observation and a question for John.
Mm-hmm.
And the observation is that today at the prayer breakfast, President Trump mentioned his executive order to protect prayer in public schools, but under a closer examination, it seems to be more directed towards serving the Muslim population's noontime prayer toward Mecca, when it doesn't even benefit any Christians in school. I mean, he said it has to do with implied it has to do with Christianity, but the whole thing is completely ambiguous and open-ended. But my question for John is directed toward training Muslim training camps in the U.S., and specifically about the New Mexico camp that was raided by the FBI and shut down. Apparently there were minors there, and that's why they raided the camp, but it turns out to be Muslim terrorist related. But they shut the camp down and closed it down, and there was no, they just seemed to cover it up. The FBI seemed to cover the whole terrorist part of it all up.
Okay, and your specific question with that, Randy, is?
If he knew what he knew about training camps.
Okay, about training camps. Okay.
In the New Mexico camp.
Very good. Thank you, Randy.
Yeah, so thanks for the question, Randy. So over the years, there have been about three dozen camps around the country. We don't have a good beat because we don't have any singular entity actually keeping track of these camps. It's being done at the state and local level, and most state sheriffs don't understand what these camps have to do with a larger movement. But I can tell you, I know as a matter of fact, that they are linked into the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood leadership. These are not necessarily Muslim Brotherhood entities. These are Muslims of America, which is Jamaat al-Fukra camps out of Pakistan. Definitely the leader, Sheikh Jalani, is a Muslim brother. But in the United States, these are primarily black prison converts that set up communities in these areas, these camps. We know there are at least about a dozen and a half right now that we know, and we get reports on that are active, and we know what they're doing. So that's the first part. Yes, I'm aware of that. Now, it's a much longer discussion to tie it into New Mexico. New Mexico, those were the children of Siraj Wahaj, who has been a leader in the U.S. Jihadi network for a long time, and an unindicted co-conspirator in the 93 World Trade Center bombing, who calls for the overthrow of the U.S. government and the imposition of Sharia, and he's still walking the streets. Hmm. And the last thing I'll say about this is because we could talk about this topic. It's a great topic. I'm glad you brought it up. But a big topic is that the FBI director, deputy director, and assistant director for counterintelligence is clearly involved in a coup against the President of the United States. So if you expect the FBI to know and understand what we're talking about and to be effective in it, you're barking up the wrong tree. What understanding the threat does, as a matter of fact, I will just tell you, we have recently briefed a group of people and some very senior individuals and law enforcement people at the local and state level, and the reaction is the same we always get. They've never heard the information, but they believe it's critical to protecting the community. Hmm. And so until local police and local city councils address this at the local level to go after these camps using state violations, these things aren't going away, and they're literally going to be the point by which Americans are attacked and killed.
Randy, thank you for the call. We're going next to John in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air, John.
Yes, I want to say that I thought we're a nation under God, not a nation under God and Allah.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I want to say that why the government allowed to be the building of the mosques all over in the United States. Every corner, every subdivision, they have a mosque in the United States. Why?
Yeah. What is the purpose of the mosque, John?
So the Islam is a totalitarian system governed by a hostile law called Sharia, Allah's divine law, and the mosque is the seat of the Islamic government in the community it's in. It is not a Muslim church, quote-unquote. It is not a place that's primarily meant for religious worship. That is not what a mosque is. According to all Islamic sources, the mosque is a place from which Islam is governed. The community is governed, not religiously led. It is the place where Sharia is adjudicated, battles are planned, jihadis are housed and trained, and it's the place from which jihad is launched. And the last thing I'll say about that, first of all, in answer to his direct question, why are we allowing them to be built? Because local leaders are insane and incompetent and unprofessional. That's why, quite frankly. However, to give them just the littlest bit of wiggle room, the FBI, most people assume the FBI would be doing something about it if there was a danger. But we are equating, wrongly, a mosque and a church or a synagogue. It's not the same thing. Last thing, the mosques in Afghanistan and Iraq, 100% of them that our military went in had weapons. 100% of the mosques that European officials have gone to in Germany, France, elsewhere, have had weapons. And we know that they're using weapons and weapons training in U.S. mosques. So there you have it.
Thank you for the call. We've got to take a break. John Guandolo, our guest, UnderstandingTheThreat.com. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Continuing our series on the dangers of discourse or dialogue with cultural Marxists, it's fine to debate them, but if you have a discourse or dialogue, you're trying to merge your worldview with theirs, and that will dilute your worldview. Well, when you do this, you're falling into trap number 7. You're agreeing to put yourself into the cultural Marxist arena of conflict and to be marginalized and characterized and compromised. Now, you can see this happen right in front of your face on social media. Someone expresses a biblical worldview, a conservative idea, and what happens? People all around them start attacking them. They find themselves being marginalized, characterized, and sadly, many of them will compromise. They'll be involved in compromise by being silent and backing down, or simply going along with the group to fit in. But how did this whole psychological process get started? By agreeing to be involved in some kind of discourse or dialogue with the cultural Marxist, and you set yourself up.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today is John Guandolo. He is president and founder of Understanding the Threat, their website, understandingthethreat.com. We are just really scratching the surface on so many issues, but check out the website. You'll get more information there. Going back to the phone lines here, and we're traveling over to New Zealand. We have Joshua calling in. Hi, Joshua. You're on the air.
Hello, Jim and John. How are you?
We're doing well. We're limited on time, Joshua. Go ahead.
Okay. I know John remembers me from we've met in Israel. My question for John today concerns in Minnesota that they have Ilhan Omar running. I heard last week on Brandon House's show that there was a moderate, so-called moderate Muslim running in the opposition who's from the Republican Party. I don't know his name or anything about him. Could you please tell me and the whole Crosstalk audience who the man is and what he stands for? And I'll listen off the ear. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Joshua.
Well, first of all, let me say it's awesome to hear from Joshua. He is a good man and certainly a warrior in this cause, so glad to hear from him. So with regard to Ilhan Omar and Ilhan Omar's challenger, that is actually a female named Dalia Akidi, who is an Iraqi refugee. And here's my concern. Is there a chance that Dalia is earnestly trying to do the right thing? Sure, I guess there's a chance. But she exactly fits the model, the frame of what we have been discussing, that will show up at your door in response to Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. And here's the key, is that what she says is not true. She says, you know, she wants to promote this form of Islam that doesn't exist. And so long as you try to create a fantasy to create real solutions, you're never going to do it. Islam is what Islam says it is, not what you want it to be. So when she steps in, now, of course, the difficulty in explaining this to Americans, many of whom do not understand some of the basic things we're talking about, then you can come across as being, you know, obviously, most people say, well, obviously she's a better alternative than Ilhan Omar. And what I'm saying is we don't know that. If you're going to take her at face value, you know, of course, it appears she is, but that would mean that she's not lying. And we know so far, since 2001, 9/11, that all 100% of the people that we have lifted up as quote-unquote moderate Muslims, Anwar al-Awlaki, Abdurrahman al-Hammoudi, those guys turned out to be al-Qaeda guys. And we, the U.S. government, elevated them to positions of great responsibility, advising the president, advising leaders in the Pentagon. And they turned out to be al-Qaeda. This level of discernment is, quite frankly, I think, almost too difficult for most folks because they don't have an understanding of this. What I'm saying is there is a reason for significant pause on all these people because we said it 3 years ago and we knew it was coming. Whether it's Omar Quadrat, the good-looking, clean-cut guy from Afghanistan running in San Diego, or the grandson of the jihadi terrorist who killed Israeli athletes running in California as a member of Congress, if you're running at that level, the chance that you're not hostile is somewhere close to zero.
And we're going to have to move on.
We need to remember.
Fred in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to know if the guest was familiar with politicalislam.com and SandraSoloman.com about education in our textbooks as far as Islam goes for America.
Yes, I'm familiar with both of those.
Okay.
Yes, and I think certainly Bill Warner, what he's doing at Political Islam, great work. What Sandra's doing, what I would say is what Understanding the Threat does that nobody else does is we're actually empowering citizens not just with the knowledge but with actions they can take at the local level to identify the networks and dismantle them, with or without the help of the police.
We're going to squeeze one more. We'll give out the site here in a moment. Mark in Cincinnati, our final call today. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. How do we as Christians tell our congressmen to use the First Amendment to discredit Islam as a religion?
Okay, well, I wouldn't. First of all, thanks for the question. I think that I don't necessarily agree with the way you phrase the question. I think that the reality is what is Islam?
Mm-hmm.
And Islam defines itself in first grade textbooks to children, to Muslim children, as a complete way of life governed by Sharia at the highest levels of Islamic jurisprudence down to the first grade, seventh grade, 12th grade levels. They teach children and the authorities in Islam that the purpose of Islam is to establish Sharia on every human being, which is in direct violation of U.S. federal code, of state code, and of their oaths of office. And it has nothing to do with the First Amendment or freedom of religion. If a person wants to call them whatever they want to call themselves and pray, they're welcome to do that. As soon as they force government institutions to allow people or force people, like we're doing in elementary schools, to wear the hijab, to train them, to change our menus, to allow women-only swimming hours, to allow halal foods, all that is the imposition of Sharia, and we're allowing it without a law being passed. And they have a duty, a sworn legal duty, under their oath, to ensure that no law except the Constitution is ever the law of the land.
John, we have less than a minute here. What do you advise? How can people get engaged in this issue?
So the first thing, and this may sound like an innocuous thing to do, is go to Understanding the Threat and sign up for our newsletter. And the reason I say that is it connects you with everything we're doing. That's the first thing. And then the training that we are doing, we're the only group in the country providing training that gives you specific ways to organize, to strategize against the communists and the jihadis in your community who are working together, by the way, and actually take actions, legally take actions against them to dismantle them. We teach you how to talk to local leaders, how to talk to state leaders, and we actually have a 9-day training program to train you how to teach what we teach. Nobody in the West does that. And we have a long line of successes, which we'll be glad to share with you, that we've accomplished in the last 8 to 10 years. And I'm really grateful for the time you've given me.
Great. Thank you, John, for your work and the service that you've given to this nation. UnderstandingTheThreat.com is the website. Again, folks, UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.